Welcome to another edition of the Writer's Room Podcast, the TDN Writer's Room Podcast. My name is Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent for the TDN. Also co-host the Down the Stretch radio show on Sirius XM Radio.
My name is Randy Moss. I work for NBC Sports, and I am sponsored, as always, on this TDN podcast by Lucy, the Wonder Dog, who is right now doing what she does best, sleep and eat. Not eating, but she's sleeping.
Zoe Campman here with First Racing. I am here with Doodle, and I've been running around like a blue-ass fly all morning to get here in time to do this podcast. So Doodle's feeling a little sleepy now as well. We'll let you go, Doodle.
Zoe, right. Wait. Running around like a what?
What is a blue-ass fly?
You've not.
Must be an English thing.
It's a very English thing. You've never heard that before?
No.
I'll let you use it.
Okay. All right. Well, you always learn something on the TDN Writers Room podcast. Now we learned that the word is blue ass fly. Anyways, we're brought to you each and every week by Keeneland, and we thank them for their sponsorship. So clearly on the racetrack over the weekend, the big Memorial Day weekend, Santa Anita was the place to be. They had a huge card on Monday. But what I thought was the most interesting and what I was most looking forward to was the debut of Eagle's Flight, the half brother to Flightline by Curlin. Lots of hype coming into the race. I talked to John Sadler beforehand. He said he was very excited, thought the horse was a good prospect, and it turned out to be, I think, exactly as he called it. Is he the next Flightline? No, but no horse is going to be the next Flightline. That would be unfair to ask him to live up to those standards. But he got an 89 buyer. He won very comfortably after a slow start. Looks like at least like a stakes horse to me, Zoe.
Oh, he's a good horse. He's a very, very good horse indeed. And, you know, John had kind of kept his cards close to the vest. And I went and spoke to him this morning for a little bit for First Things First. And he's still holding his cards close to the vest. He will not compare this horse to Flightline, which is fair enough. Nobody wants to do that, but I can. And I'm going to be quite honest, watching the pair of them work in the morning, Flightline had a very kind of knee action, almost turfy action when you watched him work over the main track here at Santa Anita or anywhere, to be perfectly honest. I can honestly say that I did not love any of Flightline's works, which is going to make me sound like a complete moron, but hey, I don't really care. He put it all on the racetrack in the afternoon, but visually in the morning, this horse looks good in the morning. He's just effortless the way he gets over the ground. He worked 59 with like one leg tied behind his back the other day and 58 out of the gate. He's a very, very good horse. He handled adversity in his very first start. You know, it was a full field. John initially was a little bit concerned that if he announced he was going to go into a maiden race, that it wouldn't fill because there's all this hype around him. And he was quite surprised when he got eight or nine other entrants for that race. It was a pretty salty maiden race yesterday. He handled the preliminaries very well, broke out the gate just fine, inside, took kickback, went through horses, came around, and won like a good thing in a good time, won 10 flat, I believe. Very, very impressed. And he did it spreading a shoe, which is even more incredible. The shoe didn't come off. John told me this morning that, you know, there was a lot of rumor that he lost a shoe in the race. He just spread a plate and he's absolutely fine this morning. So sky's the limit, I think.
When I was watching the race, Zoe, I wasn't thinking of Flightline. What went through my mind was this horse is as quick as a blue ass fly. I mean, he looked pretty darn good, I thought, for a career debut. And as you pointed out, overcame, you know, some adversity. So, really something to look forward to now for the rest of the summer.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see where John goes with him. And he's headed to bigger, better things, no doubt about that. All right, so we kicked off the weekend at Santa Anita with a Santa Margarita, a four-horse field with a 1-20 shot. Not exactly something that the bettors are going to get excited about. Adair Manor did it again. She's really good right now. At age 5, she seems to be in the best form of her career. Matter of fact, her best buyer number coming into the race, her best two buyer numbers coming into the race were both accomplished this year. I just don't know what this race tells you, if anything, about it. I mean, the field was so overmatched she didn't have to be a blue ass fly to win the race. She just needed to gallop around the racetrack. I'd like to see her take on some little stiffer competition, but Bob Baffert seems to be perfectly content keeping her in California for now. But very good horse, but we didn't learn anything from this race.
No, I mean, 1-20 pretty much says it all. I mean, we've all seen a lot of races, and, you know, maybe there's another one that I'm not thinking of, but off the top of my head, I can't think of a grade two stakes race in which one horse laid over the entire field as much as Adair Manor did in the Santa Margarita on paper, right? And I think what we're learning about Adair Manor, it was another example of it in the Santa Margarita. Okay. For her career now, she's had 17 starts with 9 wins. Okay. If you go back and you look at her past performances and you take all the races in which Adair Manor was in front midway down the back stretch at about the 5/8 pole, okay, you get 9 of those races in her career. 8 of those she won. So 8 for 9 when she's in front at the 5/8 pole. The races in which she was not in front at the 5/8 pole, she's 1 for 8. The only win when she wasn't in front at that point was in the Clement Hirsch Grade 1 last year, in which she set second, very close second. Wasn't one of her best races. She struggled a little bit to win against horses that she's far dominant against usually. She's just a horse that, and I think Juan Hernandez mentioned this after the race, I think she's much more comfortable when she's on the lead, and I think that'll pretty much be the strategy with her going forward.
I don't think it's more a case of being comfortable. I think she's a one-paced galloper. She can knock off 12, 12, 12, 12. She just doesn't have any lick. She doesn't have that turfy turn of foot. So if she's behind horses, she's not going to catch them. Now, if she's in front, she'll gallop them into the ground and you're not going to catch her because she'll just extend that big old stride of hers. So she's very quick, but yeah, you're completely right. And that's a very good stat to remember. I'll write that down for Juan Hernandez next time. What was it? 1 out of 9? Not in front of the 5/8?
1 out of 8. One out of eight.
Okay. I'll be sure to notate that. Randy says.
All right. So let's switch now to the Memorial Day card. 3 major stakes races, including 2 grade ones. The Gamely started off. And boy, as Leonard Powell done a nice job with Anisette, the winner of this race. Umberto Rispoli was aboard. His story continues later on in the day as he won 2 grade ones. First time he's been able to do that since he's come over to ride in the U.S. But this filly is so consistent. Since she came over from Europe, she's had 7 runs, 5 wins, 2 seconds. You know, this isn't the type of category or division that gets people all that excited, fillies on the turf, but she's just really good. She's really consistent, and Rispoli can ride.
Yeah, he can. He can flat out ride. When he's good, he's very, very good. He really is. And he had a very good day on Monday. Sometimes he can overthink things, and that happens to a lot of jockeys sometimes, but that wasn't the case. He rode Anisette absolutely perfectly. Now, we've not seen her since December 26th when she annexed the American Oaks that day. And going into that race, I thought she perhaps looked a little bit light. Leo Powell, a very hands-on, very astute horseman, obviously saw that himself as well and opted to give her the time off and point towards the latter half of the year. And it paid off. But you got to think that Olivia Miranda, who shipped in, ran a bang-up race as well for Will Walden, shipping all the way across the country. She ran her to half a length. So that's a very, very nice filly. Looking forward to the rest of the year as well.
Yeah, a Kentucky horses that chipped in ran second and third, right? Olivia Miralda ran second, and Forever After All, Brendan Walsh and Dixieanna finished third in there after a sixth place finish in the Modesty on the Kentucky Derby weekend undercard. Look, I mean, what we see at the Breeders' Cup pretty much every year is that just in general, the turf horses, male and female, in Southern California are not as strong as the turf horses in New York and in the eastern part of the country. But all Anna Sett can do is just compete against the horses that she's running against. And she's been, as you, as Bill pointed out, she's been remarkably consistent in her races so far in the U.S. And she showed a lot of determination to win the Gamelet.
All right, next on the program was the Hollywood Gold Cup. Glad they changed this name back to the Hollywood Gold Cup for a while. When it was the Gold Cup at Santa Anita, that really didn't work. Bob Baffert, 1-2. You know, you think of him as a trainer who dominates with two-year-olds and three-year-olds. This is a race for older horses, obviously. It's the 10th time he's won it. Finished first and second in here with Mr. Fisk and Reincarnate. These horses are what they are. They're not really grade one horses. They're nice horses. They're going to make money, but they're not going to be a challenge in the Breeders' Cup Classic. But Mr. Fisk got the job done. Unfortunately, after the race, he had to be vanned off the track. But Baffert reported he had a condylar fracture and doesn't seem too worried about him. So it looks like he's going to be okay. But the Bob Baffert Show is not always limited to the Del Mar Futurity.
Mr. Fisk looked amazing walking over. I mentioned that he had dapples as big as my fist. When he won the race before the Californian, he got a jump on the favorite that day, Judge Miller, for Mark Glatt. A brilliant ride by Kazushi Kimura. Kazushi shipped in again to ride Mr. Fisk and rode him to perfection once more. So yeah, it was a 1-2. It was also the 350th stakes winner for Bob Baffert at Santa Anita. So he holds a record for the most stakes wins. Yes, Mr. Fisk was vanned off. I stopped by this morning, Bob's barn, and he's very comfortable. He's going to go in and be operated on today. And they're going to just put a screw in that condylar that he had. And hopefully he'll be A-okay.
It was a fine ground-saving ride by Kimura, but I think probably the best part of his ride was what he did after the race.
Absolutely.
You know, when you watch Mr. Fisk gallop out on the simulcast feed, Santa Anita sort of, for good reason, abbreviated the gallop out on video once Kimura got off. But on the part that you saw, It didn't look as if Mr. Fisk was noticeably lame galloping out or anything like that. But Kimura just felt something that he described as being slightly wrong, slightly amiss. And just for cautionary purposes, he decided to get off the horse and play it safe. And, you know, obviously it's a good thing he did when the horse is taken back to the barn and diagnosed with the condylar fracture. So a good move by Kimura for doing that. And congratulations to the owner, Kyle Brookshire of Sunnybrook Stables. He's a Texas guy, doesn't have a very big stable. He bred Mr. Fisk with his late father, Larry. And so you see the familiar owners that Bob Baffert has, right? Your Mike Pegram and the Three Amigos and Amer Zidane and Michael Lund Peterson and people like that. Here's a Sunnybrook stable horse now that's a grade one winner in the Baffert barn.
Shoemaker Mile is next on the card. It concluded the run of the graded stakes races. And it's the Umberto Rispoli story. He wins again with Johannes, trained by Tim Yakteen, an excellent ride, just as was his ride earlier in the card on the Gamely Stakes. Very impressive rider. I think he's probably doesn't get quite the recognition he deserves, but this day will be go down as the biggest of his career since he came in. Trained by Tim Yakteen, horse is now 2-for-2 at four. So it looks like he's really made the transition from a decent three-year-old to maybe a four-year-old who could be, you know, even Eclipse Award material. We'll see. But he came out of winning the American grade three and now picks up his first grade one win for Johannes.
He went fast. He stopped the clock in 1:33 flat. This is a horse with a devastating turn of foot. Now, I was at the starting gate all day on Monday. When he got to the gate, he actually got a little bit warmer than he usually does. Tim Yakteen sends him to the gate in a pair of earplugs, and it's up to the jock to just reach forward and pull them out. So when Umby reached forward, I think he kind of yanked them a little bit. Tim must have really jammed them in there so he couldn't get upset with all the noise. So it took him a little bit. He pulled him, and then the horse just jumped up in the air and bucked him off. So he unseated him. I was right at the gate, and he smiled, got back on and just shook his head, went in the gate. And usually that might rattle him a little bit, but he's got so much confidence in this horse. He just settled him immediately. And another picture perfect ride for Cuyathy Stables. Cuyathy. And that means count upon your angels to help you. I'm not sure what's really behind it, but I just think it's really cool. So
that was a Randy-esque anecdote for
us. There you go. There you go. Right. Yeah. Joe and Debbie McCloskey are the owners of that particular stable. It's a great coverage in TDN about the ownership group and about how the Dan Cuyathy was their very first horse they bought. Right. They had a condo across the street from Del Mar Racetrack and decided to get into the business. So the very first horse they bought, and now the very first foal of the first horse they bought, is Johannes. Look, turf racing is all about the trip, much more than dirt racing, really, because in turf racing, horses tend to be so much more bunched. The third place finisher, Du Jour, who's the slight favorite, had a rail trip in his most recent win in the Kilrail Mile. And this time he was fanned about 7 or 8 wide turning for home, and yet was only beaten, a length and 3/4. So that definitely hurt him. And a fantastic performance in here by the runner-up, Fantastic Again, who broke on the lead, and then Goliad, as he often does, just absolutely took off. They went 22-1, 45-2 for the early pace, and yet Fantastic Again was still slugging it out with Johannes through the last eighth of a mile. So, yeah, a deserving winner in Johannes, but really good efforts by both the second and the third place finishers as well.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you each and every week by Keeneland. On Saturday, the TDN named its newest rising star, and that was Pride's Crossing, who demolished a field of maidens in her very first start at Churchill Downs. Pride's Crossing was a $1.3 million purchase for Larry Bess Oxo, OXO Equine, and was bred by Jane Lyons Summerwind Farm, also the breeders of Eagle's Flight. What else is Pride's Crossing? Why, of course, a Keeneland September graduate. Make plans to attend this year's Keeneland September sale, which begins on September the 9th. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
At Keeneland, a horse will always be measured in hands. Hands that see, that sense, that speak. Hands that hold our sport to a higher standard, not for our sake, but for theirs, for the love of the horse, for generations to come.
You know, phenomenal talent, brilliance, had that high speed that he could carry.
Jack Christopher to win the champagne.
He carried his quality from 2 to 3. He was top notch.
Oh, Woody himself would appreciate this effort.
He was the most brilliant horse all year. That's all I heard was Jack Christopher, Jack Christopher. He was obviously the one to beat.
It is Jack Christopher.
He showed a lot of brilliance and speed and ability on the track. So we hope that carries through to these foals. Our foal is the first foal out of a mare. She's got a lot of scope, a lot of quality to her, very athletic. We're really excited about what we're seeing.
Lots of Jack Christopher coming through, but just quality through and through, and size, athleticism. Very, very pleased. Extremely excited about what we're seeing with his first foals.
The Blue Gaina colt, he's big and strong, healthy, straightforward, smart, balanced. The My Sugar Bear foal, this filly is beautiful, a lot of bone, correct. I don't know what else you'd want. Can't say enough good things.
I don't think size is going to be an issue with the Jack Christophers. They seem to have more length of leg, which is going to lead to more size. I know it's very early days, but they're so easy to deal with as well.
Those 7/8 mile type horses, as stallions, it gives you so many options just for breeding lots of winners. You know, there's so many races at those distances, and you can breed sprinters by those stallions, and you can breed classic horses by those stallions. Great versatility and potentials there, and I think the best is yet to come for Munnings too. So I think we're only going to see that sire line, that branch of the sire line, only continue to improve.
So the top three all-time leading earners bred in North America. Should be an easy question, right? Number one, Arrowgate. Number two, Gunrunner. How about number three? Well, this week's Fastest Horse of the Week is brought to you by number three, Country Grammar, one of those fast sires at Windstar Farm. Country Grammar made $14.9 million. Nowadays, you don't get to those numbers without international success. $7 million of that from his two second-place finishes in the $20 million Saudi Cup. And oh, by the way, he also won the $12 million Dubai World Cup for another $6.9 million. That's how you get to the really big bucks. And Country Grammar also had enough precociousness to be a $450,000 two-year-old purchase and also break his maiden as a two-year-old in New York. And now he's in his second career as a stallion. Country Grammar standing at Windstar Farm for a bargain fee currently set at just $10,000. Now, the fastest horse of this week, a five-year-old gelding you may not be familiar with. Win for the Money did just that on Saturday at Gulfstream Park in the Mr. Steele Stakes. At a mile and a 16th on the turf, winning by nearly seven lengths with the buyer speed figure of 102. It was the first stakes score for Win for the Money, who was owned by Charlotte Weber's Live Oak Plantation. Trained by Mark Cassie, bred by Ken Ramsey and his late wife, Catherine, Ramsey shrewdly bought the dam of Win for the Money, Mayakoba, at auction for just $3,000 following her racing career. Mayakoba the dam could now run the three of us, but Ramsey liked her pedigree. Mayakoba's third dam is Terlingua. If you aren't familiar with Terlingua, look her up. Win for the Money, our fastest horse of the week. As always, our Guest of the Week segment on the TDN Writers Room is brought to you by The Green Group, a tax consulting and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry.
And The Green Group Guest of the Week this week is Cherie DeVoe. We're pleased to bring her in now because she is one of the hottest trainers in the country. Going back to Preakness Week, she won three races on the Black Eyed Susan Day card to earn the trainer bonus of $50,000. Cherie, thanks for joining us. Tell us what that was like, three stakes races on one day at Pimlico and that $50,000 check. Nothing wrong with that, huh?
No, and it's kind of funny because I wasn't planning on trying to win it. I actually didn't know about it until a couple prior when we had already appropriated our runners that we were entering. So it was great. We were hoping that a filly like Shotgun Hottie would step up and get herself into the form as she had done last year, where she ran herself into form. And, where she feels pretty, just hoping to get her off to on the right foot to this year. And then Pyrenees was the one that was kind of unknown, stepping into safe stakes company. We were just hoping that he would have a good showing of himself to show that he belonged in that league. So it all worked out better. I mean, I think our expectations were high, but it worked out better than what we had anticipated.
So you were a longtime assistant, Cherie, to Chad Brown, probably best known then for your close relationship with Lady Eli. Went on your own in 2018. You've been going up, up, up since then. Tell us a little bit about how your stable is structured right now and what are some of the other horses in your barn that you're really looking forward to this season in Stakes Company?
So right now we're based in Lexington. The majority of our stable is there. Most of the two-year-olds are there. And then we have two other divisions, a smaller one at Churchill and a smaller one at Ellis, which is where we're going to grow into. With the two-year-olds, I think it's important you really focus on the best surface, the best environment, and both Keeneland and Ellis, and not that Churchill doesn't, it's just very busy on the track there. So Keeneland and Ellis is where we keep them. And then Churchill is more based for the horses that are running, coming off of layoffs, older horses, just because it's so busy and the track can get congested and a lot of horses going over that track, the surface gets used a lot. So that's how we're structured. And this year, you know, you go in each year. I've gone into the year just hoping, you know, we can just do better and build off of the last year. So this is the first year that we've really had horses that I can say, okay, let's see what Vava can do. Let's see what She Feels Pretty can do. Let's see what Shotgun Hottie, you know. So this is the first year I really, we started the year off with known expectations, known horses. Because last year Vava was coming into form. She Feels Pretty wasn't even, she maybe just arrived at this point last year. So, you know, it was exciting in that respect to have horses that were getting excited for their future and for their campaign. So we have More Than Looks, who got himself in a little trouble. He's entered to run an allowance race, and we're hoping to get him started back this year in the Maker's Mark. But he, in true fashion to himself, got himself hurt in the stall. So he's just getting back. So hopefully we could see him this summer. You know, the usuals that we'd already, not the usuals, but the ones we've already spoken about obviously are very exciting. And then we had a filly run second in the Wonder again yesterday named Cy B. It's her first. She just broke her maiden opening day of Keeneland. So she's another one that stepped up and is exciting. And we thought she had talent and she's shown it, but she stepped into Stakes Company right off her maiden race and just got a little green trying to go in a tight spot. But, you know, that's another exciting one to add to the bunch.
Well, your stable has grown in leaps and bounds, and that was your first three-win day last Saturday on Preakness Day. I got a couple of questions for you. First, how did it feel to win three on a big day like that? And two, is there any truth to the rumor that David Ngordo, your husband, was walking around requesting to be called David DeVoe?
we'll start with the first one where I'm really working on allowing big days like that and big milestones to set in. I'm the type of person where, you know, we win and I'm already focused on what is the next task. The next day we have runners and then coming back and we have breezers. So I'm one thing that I'm working on a personal level is just trying to allow those milestones to sink in. I'm kind of a perfectionist by nature. So something else might be on my mind when I really have to pay attention to the bigger picture and how awesome this has been. You know, 6 years is a short amount of time, and it took me almost a full year to win my first race. So when you put it in that perspective, it's just such a big accomplishment where the stable has grown and my business has grown. And then as far as David, it's always been the joke that once I start winning stakes races, he was going to change his name to David DeVoe, but he says it like a bit hillbilly. So it's David DeVoe, which, I mean, everybody who knows him, I don't know if he's known for his funny sense of humor, but he does have one. and then I joked, you know, sometimes you read things on Twitter that you shouldn't. And when I was just getting started, you know, people thought, oh, her stats aren't great, or maybe she wishes she stayed in her spot, you know. And so my joke always was, well, once I get going, I'm going to change my last name to David so my stats can go back to zero and everyone can just stop to talk about it. So there's a couple last name funnies, and it's all working out. So if David has to change his name, then so be it. I guess we're progressive these days.
Sherry, you brought up the your start, and you went out on your own in 2018. You were 0 for 18 that year, and you've already touched upon this. Then you lost another 10 straight races, 0 for 28, 10 and a half months before you got your first winner. Obviously, that's in the past with your statistics now being very, very good. But at any point, were you starting to worry or just maybe this isn't going to work out for me?
Not that didn't really cross my mind. I personally had a lot of change. So I was a person that I did everything. I could do my job. I worked for Chad. There's a lot going on. It was a routine. And then I used to do the same thing over and over. In my past life, I used to do bodybuilding and I enjoyed it because everything was structured. My meals were structured and, you know, my whole day was spoken for and laid out. So the hardest thing I had with the first couple years is not just trying to figure out my new life and the new way to have my balance. Now I'm married and it's work-life balance and starting a business and training horses. And, now that we're at this point, it's now trying to enjoy all of the work that we've put forward and stop putting so much pressure. I just put a lot of pressure on myself always to succeed, to do things at a high level. So there was a lot of talking off the ledge, and that was a joke when I first started. David, it was about 6 months before, or it was in August of 2017 when we talked about it. And I said, well, you're going to have to take on a new role of Dr. Phil to just really help me stay focused and talk me off the ledge. And he's earned every penny. And now we joke about it, but he says, you can't say I didn't warn him, because I told him that it was going to be a struggle mentally. It's not ever anything that I worried about working out. It was just, do I have the constitution to keep going? You know, and then like 3 years into it, or 2 years into it, is COVID. So there's just been a couple of unideal circumstances that everybody else was in. But I'm just a big believer, if a win is just waking up and just putting one foot in front of the other and keep going, eventually the water gets a little bit easier to tread. And, the first couple of years, that's just how I got through it.
And a stepdaughter Reagan added into the mix as well as a new marriage. So that's, as any parent will attest, that comes with its own set of circumstances.
She's great. Ahead. She was the easiest part of the whole process, actually. It keeps my language in check. So everybody needs somebody to tell you that's a curse. That curse for swearing. I'm like, okay, I'll stop with the swearing.
So you've commented before how when you went on your own in 2018, I think your first starter was May of 2018, you literally started with zero. You didn't even have stable equipment. What was the biggest challenge in building your business? Was it those kind of things? Was it finding help? Was it the owners, accumulating the owners and getting their attention? What was the biggest challenge in all that?
Well, the first challenge was definitely getting the team structured. Of all things, the work visas were all delayed for everybody across the board. So ready help wasn't available, because any ready help was holding spots for work visas. So I groomed 8 horses on my own, and I was hot walking and doing everything, just to get started. And then I'm a believer in success begets success. And I'm in a fortunate position with David, who we bought some of our own horses. Some of his clients, helped. I don't want to say help. They gave me a chance. And then you just start piecing it together and just trying to make the most of what we had. So, I just think my biggest challenge, again, is just trying to keep a positive outlook on it when you're hands are sore from bedding straw and giving baths and just trying to keep the outlook, and then it all just organically has come from that, from zero to where we are. It's not success begets success, and the horses start to run well. And I will say that I've been very fortunate along the way to have clients and be in a situation where the training, we could take our time without the pressure, because, David has other businesses and forms of revenue, so that I could do what I felt was right with the horses for the best outcome for them. And sometimes, you have 8 horses and 2 of them need time off that might show promise. It's hard to do, but, just keeping that in my mind, if you take care of the horses will take care of you in the long run.
Sherry, we've watched you over the years. I watched you in your various assistant roles. And one thing that struck me is that you are not afraid of hard work. And that definitely shows. You've mentioned a couple of times structure and that you were a bodybuilder. How has all of that helped you in your training? How do you parlay that over into your training career?
Well, I'm a person that, discipline and all that with the bodybuilding stuff, that was all easy. I don't even know how I can say that now when But, you know, there were some times I have a knee replacement now, but, you know, it you become more mindful of how one small thing can lead to another bigger problem. And I remember one day I got my knee injected and I was like, oh, I could do a whole lot more, but if I do, I'm going to get hurt. So then it stays in the back of your mind, like maybe do more diagnostics before you do something so that a horse doesn't get hurt. And you know, as far as fitness goes, anyone who does it can parlay that into what we do, because we are just creating fitness in the horses and watching for subtle changes, backing off when you need to back off and trying to listen for them, because obviously they don't tell you until there's a major problem. So just trying to be mindful of how one progression in my own, you know, bodybuilding or sports life, because I've always played sports, and trying to get that, but you have to really pay attention to the horses, because they're not going to speak to you the way your mind speaks to you.
Yeah. Sharia, the upward trajectory of your career, you're getting better and better every single year. You made a huge quantum leap in 2023, 5.5 million purses. I'm sure you're going to be able to beat that this year. If you keep going on that plane, you're getting into Chad Brown, Todd Pletcher, Brad Cox territory. But I take it that's not really your goal, that you think, you know, being the so-called super trainer would just be a little overwhelming.
It is. It's not really what I'm comfortable doing. And I don't want to take anything away from those that you've mentioned. It's just, I would like a smaller, you know, I'm at 115 right now, and I don't really want more than that. We're in three different divisions right now, and we're all in Kentucky, so I can travel to each division. I have great help. We have, thankfully, enough grooms to where I'm not having to muck the stalls out, but if I had to, I would. But I one of the aspects of how we structure what we're doing with the horses is we just try to put them in places where they're going to do their best. So that might mean I might not have a great Saratoga meet, but the summer was great because we shipped out. We won the Charlestown Oaks. We won the Molly Pitcher. You know, so I'm not, I laugh because through all this, I hit the top 10 trainer mark for the first time at Fairgrounds, but that's just because I don't focus on one specific meet and more just trying to run the horses where they're going to do their best.
Well, and that might actually coincide this year, the way your stable is going, with the Breeders' Cup this fall. Right. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I'd have to think Vava would be the long-term goal, the filly and mare sprint. Shotgun Hottie, with her speed figures, is getting better and better. The Distaff division looks like it could be there, perhaps, right? Breeders' Cup Distaff. Are those the kind of things that you're already looking ahead to?
Yeah, most certainly. Just trying to figure out each, like I'll use Bob as an example. Her two goals are the Ballerina and the Breeders' Cup. So how we get there is how we get there. So, you know, we'll run in we're pointing to the Grade 3 Chicago, which, you know, it's a step down from just winning a Grade 1, but it's a prep race for where we're having to go. And then again, this year, at this point, I'm just going to say from this point, because it's a good reference point, I didn't have any that I was hoping to go to the Breeders' Cup. And last year, you know, we had I'm sorry, my brain is just not functioning. But at this point last year, we didn't have any. So hoping that some of the two-year-olds, we've got a lot of exciting prospects, but, you know, they have to take themselves there.
What's the plan for Shotgun Hottie? Like the personal ensign maybe? And I mean, what are you looking for her?
Right now, we're going to point her to the Fleur de Lis. And then the personal ensign, she won the Molly Pitcher. So just kind of see where she fits best. You know, she continues on her trip. Last year at this point, she needed some time. She ran the Molly Pitcher and she needed some time after that race. And then she's just a hard one because you have to run her into form. She's a big filly. She's just got a lot to her. So you can't really get her ready by training on her. You just got to let her run herself. So I don't really know where her top would be. Is she going to continue to improve? And we'll try to see with the fleur-de-lis, and then that'll dictate what we're going to do with her for the rest of the summer.
I think she, didn't she run a super fast number on the Ragusan sheets?
She did. She ran a 7.
A 7? That's wickedly fast.
Yes.
Anyway, I think she's awesome. I'm a huge fan of Vava, and I'm hoping to see them out here in Southern California for the Breeders' Cup. But you mentioned you're in 3 divisions. So can you talk a little bit of your team and who manages which division? Because if you're in 3, you can't be in the same place all at the same time.
Right. And it's really important with any, even if you have 2 small divisions, to have great communicators. I prefer a lot of my assistants to have communication with me. And if they can communicate, we can usually figure out a problem or what to do. So at Churchill, I have Darren Williams, who joined us 2 years ago, and he's great. He's one that if I call and say you have to go to Indiana, he's on the road to Indiana. You need to go here for 3 days. And I pair him up with another longtime employee. His name is Johnny, and he's a foreman, but he's runs the Turfway string in the winter. So he's can be an assistant trainer as well. So there's always coverage in that area. And then Ellis, I have an assistant. His name is Daniel, and Daniel and I have worked together since the very beginning of Chad, of when I worked for Chad. So he knows exactly what I'm looking for. He knows what my expectations are. He's great with the horses. He's great with the help. So he's at Ellis. And then we have David Carroll, who just joined us from working for Mark Cassie. And he's our assistant along with Enrique at Keeneland. So, you know, when you have, we have 2 different barns, you know, we have a Rice Road, which is a permanent barn, and then we have the main track side. So David is and Enrique are both the assistants there, and they work together. So I'm always clear. All the assistants are one. There's not one above another, but they work together really well at Keeneland.
So do you have David and Declan?
I have David, Declan, and Kim. So I have the most of the family. Wow. And then Ashlyn comes in and clips for us. So Kim is now doing a lot of our therapy. She has a MagnaWave machine that we got. And then she does a lot of massage and restorative therapies for them. So they're great. Everybody's excited. And David just joined the team. And Enrique has joined the team this winter. So, it's a lot of catching up and just feeling out their comfort level with my expectations. My sister did work for us for a long time, but her life has taken her to New York. So she's up there. A lot of people wouldn't really say anything, but she just wanted to relocate to New York, and we just didn't have a division to go there. So she's up there now.
Cherie, before we let you go, last question from me. Is there one goal, one thing, if you could say, what do I want to accomplish the most in horse racing right now, what would that be?
It's hard to answer that because I kind of set these lofty expectations that are not even goals. I just think like I just need to do this. But really what I hope, and I was actually thinking about this randomly on my drive back from Louisville this morning, is, you know, I just want somebody. My goal as a trainer is when people talk that it's not everyone's not going to like you, but just to have a good opinion about the whole process of my ideas of training, you know, which is being a respectful person, just be a positive impact on the industry as a whole. I don't go out there and say I'm a woman trainer. I'm here for women. I'm a person who, you know, my parents were harness trainers and they worked hard. I didn't come from a lot of means. So I just try to be positive and if that's my goal, is just to have a positive impact, that's really what my whole encompassing thought is of why I'm doing this.
Very good. Well, Cherie, thank you so much for joining us as this week's Green Group Guest of the Week. Congratulations on that huge afternoon at Pimlico. And we'll be seeing you a lot more times in the winner circle, I'm sure.
Hopefully. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Cherie.
The downside of someone like Cherie DeVoe appearing as the Green Group guest of the week is that they have to talk to us. The upside is that Cherie now receives a free 1 hour tax consultation from Lynn Green and Company at the Green Group, who over the years has saved a lot of money on the tax bills of some of those who participate in the thoroughbred industry. For how the Green Group might be able to help you, go to greenco.com.
When it comes to the horse industry, tax laws are complicated and unique. That is why most people overpay on their taxes. Why not get a second opinion from the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the thoroughbred industry? With over 800 clients in the horse business alone, the Green Group has the expertise to save you taxes. There is a reason the most successful owners, breeders, trainers, vets, and horsemen use the Green Group as their tax advisors. We save you taxes. Over the past 40 years, the Green Group founder, Len Green, has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His DJ stable competes at the highest level and has received the game's most prestigious honors. Len Green's in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with current-edge tax-saving strategies, produces positive tax-saving results for clients. Take advantage of this special offer. The Green Group will give you a complimentary and confidential review of your tax return. Contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com.
Let's now kick off a new segment here on the TDN Writers Room podcast. It's News You Can Use with Emma Berry, the TDN's European and international editor. We'll check in with Emma from time to time to catch up on what's going on overseas. And this segment is brought to you each and every week by our good friends at Darley. So, Emma, thanks for joining us. This would be a welcome addition to our podcast. Obviously, we want to talk about the Epsom Derby coming up this weekend. And how are things shaping up for the Ballydoyle team? And what does it say that City of Troy is still the favorite after that very poor race in the 2000 Guineas?
Yeah, it's everyone's guess as to how he's going to show up on Saturday. He's actually drifted quite a bit in the market today, funnily enough, and his stablemate Los Angeles is now almost co-favorite with him. But amazingly, since the Guineas, just for a short while after that, he sort of was toppled from the top of the Derby market where he was all winter. But he went almost straight back up there. So everyone has faith, it would seem, that Aidan O'Brien can pull off another magic trick like last year, which when we saw August Rodin bomb out in the Guineas and then come back and win the Derby really impressively. So I think we're hoping for a second miracle.
So, Emma, there was so much hype about City of Troy. I know part of it probably had to do with his pedigree being by Justify, but Aidan O'Brien threw quite a lot of gasoline on that hype fire with his comments about City of Troy. Has he given any sort of credible, tangible explanation for the 2000 Guineas flop? Any excuses that could hold water?
I mean, various excuses straight after the race to do with him hitting the gates. He went in very late in the Guineas and he hit the stalls just before they jumped. So that was sort of an initial excuse. But nothing really tangible, I would say. There was a press warning a few weeks ago at Ballydoyle. I was there and, elaborated that they feel that they now know, what was wrong with him, but without actually specifying. And certainly he looked great that morning. They were happy. They appear to be happy with him since the 2000 Guineas, and actually have released a video just in the last hour or so on social media showing him having a piece of work this morning with the stablemate, looking to go really nicely. So no, not a specific, we found, he scoped badly or anything like that. But there certainly seems to be confidence within the camp that they've got to the bottom of him. And, O'Brien's runners this year they've seemed to have all needed the run. He went straight to the Guineas without a run, which is the usual practice for his Guineas runners. But, a lot of his trial horses as well have been, perhaps running a little bit below standard. So, we can but hope that the old saying used to be that the 2000 Guineas was the best Derby trial. I guess we'll see if that is indeed the case.
I'm not buying it. And I was all over him like a rash going into the Guineas. I'm all out. I am all over Ambiente friendly, and I want you to tell us all about that and his gallop over the lime kilns. And then another horse, Ancient Wisdom, who I think is going to love the going because it's been raining cats and dogs over there, has it not?
Yeah, completely sick of all this rain. It looks like it's going to be drying up a little bit. It's you know, a real changeable forecast as well. So my guess is that it'll probably be on the easy side at Epsom for Friday and Saturday, but hopefully not a bog. Ancient Wisdom, yes, would cope with that. He was a Group 1 winner last year, and he's done nothing wrong other than be beaten by a very good horse in the Dante Stakes just a fortnight ago, and that's Economics, who sadly isn't coming to the Derby. He's almost the horse that's impressed me most of all the horse of the three-year-old colt, certainly in Britain, that I've seen this year. But he's quite a big, long-striding horse, and William Haggis, his trainer, just felt that Epsom, with its sort of trickiness, the camber and all the up and down, would come too soon for a horse that's really still growing into his frame. He's not coming, sadly, but he was the sixth length winner of the Dante. So, Ancient Wisdom chased him home. And again, that was his first run of the year. So hopefully we'll have brought him forward. And Ambiente Friendly, oh God, I'd really love to see him go well. James Fanshawe, I think, is one of the most underrated trainers in Britain. He's trained every type of horse you can imagine, from champion sprinters to champion hurdlers. He's had a Breeders' Cup winner. He has yet to train a British Classic winner, which is extraordinary, really, considering he's so accomplished and, there's a real growing sense of anticipation and excitement. Ambiente Friendly's owner, Bill Gredley, is 91. He's had lots and lots of good horses in training, but he too would dearly love a Derby winner. And the horse looked really good on Sunday morning. You know, James Fanshawe isn't the type of trainer who comes out sort of with bold predictions. He's very cautious. And I know he seems to me to be quietly optimistic. You know, he's very happy with what he saw on Sunday morning. The horse seems nice and relaxed. And, you know, all being well in the next, he looks great as well. You know, he's a lovely, strong colt. I think there's a little bit of quiet confidence behind him for Saturday.
Well, Emma, back to the Derby for just a second. Setting City of Troy aside, since we really don't know exactly what we're going to get from him, how evenly matched does the rest of the field look to you? And since long shots have had a lot of success in this race recently, are there any maybe that people can keep an eye on?
There are almost too many to keep an eye on. I think more of the sort of outsiders for the field, we've had a lot of comments in the last few weeks of their trainers and connections saying, if ever we're going to have a go, it's this year. You know, it does seem an open race. I really like Voyage, who's coming in with a very unexposed profile, if you like. He's only raced once. That has been done before. Morstan, in, I think, 1973, won the Derby after running just once. He's trained by Richard Hannon, who had the first and second in the Irish 2000 Guineas on Saturday. He won really nicely his maiden at Newbury, which is always a very good maiden. He's by the 2015 Derby winner, Golden Horn, and he just looks to have a really nice profile, bar his relative racing inexperience. He was at Epsom last week for a spin round the course. They had a gallops morning and four of the Derby horses were there, and he's quite a neat colt, very well balanced, and I think he could spring a bit of a surprise at a big price. And Dallas Star as well, coming over from Ireland. I like his profile too. He's also in double figures, and I think he's a horse that's perhaps slipping a bit beneath the radar.
Well, Emma Berry, thanks so much. A very enlightening conversation about the Epsom Derby. We'll be watching this Saturday, and we look forward to having you again as a part of our team here on the Writers Room podcast.
Great to be involved. Thanks very much.
Darley's Knight of Thunder continues his fine run of success this season. His classic contender, Economics, was the runaway winner of the Group 2 Dante Stakes at York, while his daughter Fairy Godmother landed Ireland's first juvenile group contest of the year for trainer Aidan O'Brien. Last Friday at Haydock, Electric Storm became the latest winner for Knight of Thunder, who is a proven son of the absolutely brilliant De Bowie. And just like his sire, Knight of Thunder's progeny are effective in the US too. At Churchill Downs, his three-year-old daughter, Dynamic Pricing, won the Grade 2 Edgewood Stakes for Chad Brown and looks like a filly with a very bright future.
Well, there was some news made off track during the week, and it pertains to the Belmont Stakes. Flavien Prat is going to ride Sierra Leone, who will likely be the favorite in the Belmont Stakes, and is taking over for Tyler Gaffleone. And this is a good question for Zoe. Tyler Gaffleone, great rider, but we all know about that stretch run. And I don't blame Chad for making, maybe it's just making a change for change's sake. But Zoe, could what could have been done differently if you were to say that Gaffleone did something less than perfect? What would that be?
I mean, it's really hard to say because the horse lugged in on the bluegrass. The one thing you can say is that Tyler knows the horse very well, and he knows that he has a propensity to lean in down the lane, especially around other horses. I think he just wants to get to the rail. So you have to prepare yourself for that. Maybe when you turn for home, you immediately pull your stick through to your left hand. Chad Brown had mentioned that in the past he tried a cage bit on him and the horse didn't really like it. In his past work, he said he has started utilizing a cage bit, but he doesn't really lug in the mornings. But he's also, if you watch his works, he's always on the inside of horses. Chad says it's because he's kind of a lazy workhorse and he wants the other horse to propel him along. But I don't believe I've really seen him work on the outside of horses. So he's going to equip him with the cage bit, and Flavien's going to be cognizant that this horse does lean in, and I'm sure he's going to pull his stick through a little bit earlier. I mean, Chad made a big thing that he should have had his stick in the left hand already. I don't know. But that's basically what can be done.
Zoe, what is a cage bit?
A cage bit's like a Houghton. It's a straight bar that goes through the horse's mouth rather than just a broken snaffle. It will give you a bit more power steering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when they tried the cage bit on Sierra Leone previously in a workout, the exercise rider came back and told Chad that the horse was not the same. The horse was not focused at all. It was like he was preoccupied with what was pressing against his cheek and kind of losing focus on what he was doing out on the racetrack. So they're hoping that with a little more repetition that the horse will get accustomed to it and that it won't be any kind of a problem if they choose to use it in a race. Look, and the reason that Chad Brown gave for using Tyler Gaffleone in the first place on this horse, instead of Flavien or instead of Irad or some of the other riders he might more frequently use, is Tyler's success at Churchill Downs. And now that we're past the Kentucky Derby and the horse, you know, had the issue that he had and the ride that he had in the Derby, then it's not surprising to me that he's going to now give Flavien Prat a try. It's not an indictment, I think, on Tyler Gaffleone, but I'm sure Tyler is, you know, was bitterly disappointed at the news.
Now, weren't you guys excited by that big card yesterday at Belmont with the second race was the feature, the something other on the grass? What happened to Memorial Day in New York? It used to be the biggest deal. They put the Met Mile on the Belmont Stakes card. Now, Naira has done a fantastic job creating this huge extravaganza on Belmont Day. I would say next to the Breeders' Cup, it's the single best day of horse racing in the calendar. But the problem is you weaken everything else. And I'm an old school New York guy. Met Mile is going to be run on Memorial Day. It's going to be a huge day. Now it's just another day. Please, Naira, put the Met Mile back on Memorial Day and take one of those other stakes and put it back on the Belmont card. And maybe even, what was the race? I don't even remember. Was it Soaring Softly? Was it that the name of the race? On see, you guys don't even know. That's how important it was. So I would just, that's just one of the things, like one of my pet peeves about this. And a lot of people feel the same way. It's too bad that the Memorial Day weekend at Belmont is a dud. I shouldn't say a dud, but isn't as exciting as it could be. And the reason is it doesn't have the Met Mile anymore.
All right. Right now we have a new segment on the TDN. We're going down Randy's rabbit hole. Take it away, Randy.
Yeah, it ain't happening, Bill. They are not going to move the Met Mile back to Memorial Day because the handle doesn't justify it. Before they moved the Met Mile, it was averaging about $2.9 million in handle. The very first year Martin Panza moved it to Belmont Stakes Day, It was California Chrome's 2014 Belmont Day, but it did over $9 million in handle. Just the last 2 years, 2023, 2022. Last year, it did $7.5 million. You get a lot of $6, $7 million handles in the interim. So it's doing roughly double to triple what it was handling when it was run on Memorial Day. And from a business perspective, I mean, Naira just can't ignore that. I love tradition as much as the next guy. You know, I'd love to see him keep the same tradition. But in this case, financially, it's been an improvement to take all of these major races and lump them on one day. And they're doing it pretty much once a month at Naira because people just don't come out anymore for your individual races like the Met Mile on Memorial Day. It just doesn't happen.
Randy, I hate it when you make sense. Oh, boy.
I concur. And that segment was brought to you, Randy's Rabbit Hole, by Dude Wipes.
And blue-ass flies. Don't forget the blue-ass flies.
Yeah, and you know what? Santa Anita's not complaining. We had a terrific day on Monday, Memorial Day, mm-hmm. with our graded stakes action and a great handle as well. So, yeah, keep going. Stay away.
This Friday, the biggest night of the year at Penn National. More on the Penn Mile and the Penn Oaks in just a minute. But the card also includes two $100,000 stakes for Pennsylvania breds on the turf, included in the schedule of 2,300,000 stakes just for PA breds to be run in 2024. Pennsylvania pays. Over the last 10 years, the Pennsylvania Breeding Fund has distributed an average of $28.5 million a year in breeders' awards, owner bonuses, and restricted race purses. If you'd like to learn more about breeding and owning PA breds, here are three options for you. You can pick up the phone the old-fashioned style and call 610-444-1050, or you can email at info@pabred.com or go to PABred.com, the website.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide the lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Uncle Heavy Late, it's a photo finish!
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The winner, Uncle Heavy, he's a three-year-old bred in Pennsylvania.
Don't miss Penn National's signature event, Penn Mile Night, Friday, May 31st at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. There are two Pennsylvania bred stakes, each with a $100,000 purse, plus the $150,000 Penn Oaks. It's all capped off by the $400,000 Grade 3 Penn Mile. Before the races, don't miss our special meet and greet with our guest race caller, Larry Colmiss, Friday, May 31st at Penn National, first post 5 p.m.
As Randy mentioned, this Friday night at Penn National is the biggest night of the year with the running of the Grade 3 $400,000 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks, along with two $100,000 stakes races for PA breds. Likely starters for the $400,000 Grade 3 Penn Mile include Neat, winner of the Grade 3 Transylvania at Keeneland, and Tricarry, the winner of the Grade 2 American Turf at Churchill Downs. Other possibles including Shug McGahee's Cugino and Lagmios for Steve Asmussen. And the most likely starters for the Penn Oaks include Pounce, winner of the Grade 3 Here Comes the Bride at Gulfstream Park, and Crown Imperial, winner of the $500,000 Untappable at Kentucky Downs. Javier Castellano was the probable jockey aboard Pounce for Mark Cassie, and we could have a Frankie Dettori sighting as he may be coming to Grantville, Pennsylvania to ride Just Better for Steve Asmussen. It's the biggest night of the year at Penn National. Make plans to attend. First post is at 5 p.m.
In this week's edition of First Things First, presented by Santa Anita, I caught up with John Sadler and a rather camera-shy Eagles flight. How are you feeling today, John? Relieved?
I'm feeling good. I'm happy to get his first start under him. Had a good race. He got a lot of experience in that race and came out of it good. So we're a good, happy Tuesday.
You mentioned a lot of experience. Like, it was literally four races in one.
Yeah, you break from the inside in a big field, have a lot of horses on top of you, eat a lot of dirt, come up the inside and swing out. Really a beautiful ride by Flavien, obviously. You know, and he handled it so well. You know, you didn't see him throwing his head up, you know, so didn't get a lot out of that.
Everybody, of course, is making comparisons to Flightline. What have you seen from him?
Well, we don't do that.
I know.
This is his own horse, and he's a nice horse, and we're going to develop him and probably go long, maybe even his second start. So we'll see. Take it one step at a time.
How good is he, John?
We don't know. We're going to find out.
It's been very cagey. I'll tell you what I've seen from him in the morning. Watching him work in the morning, it seems like he's got a different action to Flightline. Flightline had a little bit more knee action. This guy just skips.
Yeah, this horse is a little, Flightline moved like a Mack truck, you know, or a super wheeler or something. But this horse, very smooth. Like I said, distance is his friend.
What about Abdul Al-Sagor? He's been working him each and every time. How much has he meant to the operation?
Oh, he did a nice job, worked him very well, listened every time. And, you know, the key is not to get caught up in a fast work or anything like that. Even though his works look fast, if you watch his works, he was not being asked hard.
All right, John. Well, thank you. It's exciting. Many thanks to John and Eagles Fly. Do just want to mention, guys, that even though we had two Grade 1 races on Monday at Santa Anita, I think there were more people around the paddock for race number 8. They were stacked 5 or 6 deep just to see Eagles Fly come out. And that was how much hype there was involved with him. And he really justified, pun intended, all the hype there for Eagles Fly. Do want to remind you guys that Santa Anita will continue Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with a 1 o'clock post time. Come out on the weekend for the Dragon Boat races. It's a really fun afternoon at Santa Anita.
Well, now that the Preakness is in the books, the 2024 Preakness, we're learning a lot more about the future of Maryland racing. I did a Q&A with Corey Johnson, who has been appointed as the head of the Maryland Thoroughbred Racetrack Association, which is going to be the NYRA-like body that's going to take over racing from First Racing / the Stornek Group. We're going to get a whole new Pimlico. They think it's going to be open for the 2027 Preakness. The 25 Preakness will be run at the current Pimlico. 2026 Preakness run at Laurel. They hope to be back at Pimlico with the brand new grandstand 2027. There was two things that I picked up from my interview with Corey Johnson that I think are pretty important. Number one is he's saying we've got to cut back on the number of days. And this has been a bone of contention with management and the horsemen, because management has been saying we need fewer days. That makes it more economically possible. And also he brought up something that you don't hear a lot more. And this is, I think, is something that much more racetracks really ought to look into: a circuit. How about a Maryland-Delaware Park circuit where Delaware Park could run in June, July, and August? Maryland could run the rest of the year. The purses would be great at both tracks. Horsemen would be able to go back and forth to the two places. So I think there's a lot of topics and there's a lot of things out there. But my main focus on this, the main thing that I learned from this, is I think the thing is going to be much better in the future in Maryland racing, especially getting rid of that terrible grandstand at Pimlico.
And I know Corey. He is a super smart guy with skin in the game. So he knows the game. He knows the horsemen. He knows how it works. He's been in and out of Maryland a bunch of times, organizing pretty much everything from the floor up. So he knows how to start a racetrack. Look what he did with Kentucky Downs. He is a super smart, super savvy guy who, you know, he's a breeder. He's got lots of horses, CJ Thoroughbreds. Now, he's got to step back from part ownership of CJ Thoroughbreds because it's a conflict of interest. This is how much he believes in this project, that he's going to leave his Thoroughbred organization and go full in with the Maryland, with the state of Maryland, to try and revitalize Pimlico. So that's fabulous. The training center, wherever it's going to be, apparently is already in the works, but everyone's kind of kept mum on that right now. It can only be good having Corey Johnson, kind of a man of the people, ahead of the game. Go ahead, Randy.
No, I was going to let you finish. Importantly to this whole equation, Corey has intimate knowledge and experience with what expanded gaming does and what the lack of it does to racetracks. I mean, he basically was involved in Lone Star Park from the ground up. He was instrumental, along with Steve Sexton, in getting the Breeders' Cup to Lone Star Park back in, what was it, 2004? And Lone Star is now, all Texas racing is basically dying on the vine without any expanded forms of gaming. And then Corey went from Lone Star to Kentucky Downs, where, I mean, it's the poster child almost in American racing for what casino gambling, historical horse racing machines, et cetera, can do for a racetrack and its purses. So Corey has seen both sides. And now whether, you know, how much that will impact the political realities in Maryland of trying to get expanded gaming, you know, at Pimlico and to benefit Maryland racing remains to be seen. But Corey definitely knows how vitally important it is in today's horse racing economy.
A couple of things I'd like to add to that. I asked Corey for my TDN interview that very question, and he said, basically, I'm paraphrasing it, who wouldn't want to have slot machines or HHR machines, but says there's no plans in the offing right now, and we want Maryland racing to be able to stand on its own. So that was his take on that. Yeah, but, you know, we're going to lose all these great memories of our times at Pimlico. One of my favorite was whatever year, Elliot Walden was still a trainer. He's training Menifee coming into the second leg of the Triple Crown, and I was interviewing Elliot, just me and him, on the backstretch of Pimlico. A rat bigger than Zoe ran right in between the two of us in the middle of the interview. It's like, okay, I must be at Pimlico.
Do you guys Do you guys remember Kegasus?
Oh, yes, of course. Half man, half keg.
Yeah, he didn't last very long, but he was fabulous. Yeah, I spent a lot of time with Kegasus. 1 year at Pimlico. Yeah, interviewing him. It was great. Great TV. Oh, before we go, guys, we have not mentioned the Chosen Vron. How awesome.
Yes, very good.
On Saturday. I mean, he's won 18 races, 17 of them stakes, and he just keeps winning and winning and winning. He is sensational, is he not?
The coolest horse in training.
Oh, yeah, he is, really. I mean, you guys know I have a lot of favorite horses, right? Well, the Chosen Vron,
yes, you've
got to like the Chosen Vron. I mean, he's just like, he wins everything in sight. It's unbelievable.
What's that, Zoe, about 14 of favorite horses, Randy has?
It's about like right. It's about right. Well, you know, that's current horses.
Right.
You might have a run for your money with the Dare Manor now, because you know who had his picture snapped at the barn who was here on Saturday was none other than Mario Lopez, and his cute little dimples came out to the track. He even got to get up close and personal with Adair Manor and hold her with the shank. Yeah, it was great, actually, because he was tweeting on his social media and saying what a great time he had at Santa Anita, which is what we need more of. But yeah, so he got his picture with Adair Manor. Now it's your turn, Randy. The XBTV Work of the Week is Fierceness, who had his first work back on Friday at Saratoga since finishing 15th in the Kentucky Derby. Fierceness worked over the Oklahoma training track in 50 seconds flat. This is him on the outside with his regular exercise rider, a good friend of mine and fellow ex-English person, Danny Wright, in the saddle. Mindframe is on the inside, and they just work head and head and gallop out, probably a good mile for trainer Todd Pletcher. Fierceness, of course, is headed to the June 8th Belmont Stakes at Saratoga.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
The TD and Riders Room also brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Last week, we told you that West Point's Atomic Blonde would be rematched with Chop Chop in last Saturday's Kirtana Stakes at Churchill Downs. Well, The German bred Atomic Blonde turned the tables on the 3-5 Chop Chop to win by half length and vault her West Point partners into the world of instant camaraderie. And this weekend, it is Stephen Foster Preview Day, Saturday at Churchill Downs. 6 stakes, including 4 graded stakes, and West Point will be in action with Northern Invader. He runs in the Grade 3 Arlington Stakes, and also with Cugino in the Audubon Stakes. To learn more, visit westpointtb.com.
Well, that's a wrap on this week's show. I want to thank my partners, Zoe Cadman and Randy Moss, and a new member of the team, Emma Berry, from the foreign edition of the TDN. She gave us a lot of information on the Epsom Derby coming up. And also the people that do such a good job for us behind the scenes, our editors and our producers, Katie Petruniak, Anthony LaRocca, and Aaliyah LaRocca. That's a wrap on this week's TDN Writers Room podcast. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll see you next week.